IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Well, hello and welcome back to IRS on the Road.
Another week has somehow slipped away.
Oh my goodness.
Actually, this seems like a really long week.
It seemed like a long month. We've been here pretty much since July 3rd. We're up at Bear Lake, Idaho. We saw some fireworks last night for the 24th of July. And this won't be airing until tomorrow, but we really have had an amazing experience.
Well, last night, about 11:15 or so, all of our sons and pretty much all of our grandkids came rolling in.
Three of our sons.
Well, there was a fourth one there, but he went back a different way, you know.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Four of our sons took, we figured, was it 18, 17 or 18 of our grandkids to Oregondo, as we call it, which is our name for this wonderful wonderland in the Umatilla Forest, the Blue Mountains of Eastern Oregon, old growth forest. Some of you know the story that almost three decades ago, we built a log cabin there.
That seems like another world in a lot of ways. Oh my goodness, we were babies ourselves. We had two, it was before we even had our last baby and our two-year-old.
Oh my gosh, so it's more than that.
It's been a long time.
But it was a crazy idea, and we it really originated from finding an ancestor's cabin at Lagoon Amusement Park, of all things. They have a little pioneer village there. And there was the Bingham, Sanford Bingham Cabin.
Right.
And it was the actual cabin. It was actually the cabin that they built for their family as pioneers. Boy, this is a good time to talk about this,
right?
Pioneer Day was this week, and we just got this harebrained idea. Wouldn't it be a great thing to teach our kids about their pioneer heritage and about hard work by going up to this old growth forest and building a log cabin to replicate the Bingham cabin? And so we did.
It was so funny, and I realize it has been 40 years because our youngest son was 2 years old when we went the first time, and he just turned 40.
Oh my gosh, that's right, 40 years ago. And it took two whole summers. We were riders at the time, we still are, of course, but we could ride from anywhere, including, since in those days we rode on yellow pads with real pens.
And notebooks, and
we could do it anywhere. And so we packed up all nine of our kids and we headed up to, we had purchased this little piece of land right in this dense, I mean, you might think you've been in a forest, but till you've been in an old growth forest with trees, some of them 6 feet in diameter, and moss everywhere and ferns, and just a primeval forest, I think. And it was just, in a way, heaven on earth, but in a way it was hell on earth.
Right.
Because we had no facilities.
Right. Nothing. We had about 40 logs brought in. Remember that? But they weren't debarked. What do we call that?
Well, yeah. We couldn't cut enough trees down, so we cut some, but we had some brought in. But from there, I mean, our whole idea was to replicate how the pioneers built a log cabin, but we made one major concession, and that was chainsaws.
Right.
We were cutting and notching those logs. And our family. Well, we had one friend we should tell a little about. Cubs.
Yes, because we just saw them last week. He and his wife came up and showed us, because he was actually a pioneer at heart, half Indian. He's not really Indian, but he loves Indians. And he knew how to do so many things that we didn't know. We went up there just crazy babies. We did not know what we were doing.
Cub and Bonnie Wolf, they get a shout out because Cub can do most anything. He taught us how to make block and tackles. He taught us how to notch the logs. He taught us, and he's a doctor, so that was really useful.
Yeah, he fixed us up with every accident.
We had a lot of injuries, including me falling out of a tree. One of his boys and one of our boys thought it would be really interesting to light the cobwebs on fire inside of a huge old hollow tree. And of course, that thing went up in flames, and we were worried we were going to set the whole forest on fire. So Cub and I were climbing up a little tree that we pushed up inside of the big tree, throwing water up and splashing on it, and I fell off and caught myself on a limb, and Cub didn't tell me until later that I came within an inch of rupturing my spleen and that he doesn't know what he would have done if that had happened.
Honestly,
the more we think about that, the more scared I get that we did it.
We're a little more cautious in our old age, but it was an amazing adventure. We had to make a latrine, handmade.
We piped water in from
the
spring.
We piped water in from the spring.
That was another concession. We brought some PVC pipe to get the spring water to our campsite.
Right. I had Dutch ovens. I read Diane Thomas's book. For those of you who are old, you'll remember. What was that called?
I don't know.
Making It Easy or something. Anyway, so it was just crazy. Our two-year-old looked like he had been rolled in honey and then rolled in dirt. By 10 o'clock in the morning, he is just plastered.
All the kids did, but there's wildlife there. We had to watch out for bears. I mean, it was just something. Now, why is this relevant right now? Because last night, these four sons of ours and these 17 or 18 kids came back from what they do every year after our reunion. These crazy guys take the kids, their kids and other cousins, and they head up to this site. And the cabin lasted for, 36 years, because it fell down 4 years ago.
Right.
The termites and the pack rats kind of got it. But the interesting thing is the boys have used the logs and all the wood from it and so on to create a wonderland up there in this forest. And I mean wonderland. They've got zip lines. They've got huge teeter-totters made out of 40-foot logs. They've got, this year they brought a trapeze net and figured out a way to have a trapeze and fall into the net. And I mean, it's just a wonderland, but every year we think someone's going to get seriously injured. We've had a couple of broken arms, but largely, I think we pray a lot. While they're gone, we pray a lot. Every year I say, I'm going to go this year, guys, and every year I chicken out and say, I'm going to go next year.
Well, it is really crazy. The kids, though, absolutely love it. We have a granddaughter, a senior in high school, a junior in high school. They still are loving going. And then we had a four-year-old. You have to be four to go. So they just had this huge bunch of kids.
There's a lake there. They catch trout. They go in the lake. That's their bathtub. My goodness, you know, talk about 4 days packed with adventure. And they got back last night and they were hired in kites. They had had such a great time. They had learned so much.
Showing us videos and so excited about everything. It's really remarkable. Kudos to our boys who are willing to do that.
Kudos to our boys is right. So that's just what happened last night. Now, what we want to have happen today on this podcast, you might recall, some of you regular listeners, 3 weeks ago, we talked about the three deceivers and the idea or the thought we have, the belief we have, actually, that the thing that so many of us we're seeking and we're desiring and we're coveting and we're trying to find and we think of them as the goals of our lives are actually very false goals. They're really deceivers. And those three are control, ownership, and independence. COI, we call those the three deceivers, because in the broader view of life, they're all false. We control so little. We'd like to think we control things. And we can try to control ourselves, of course, and our tempers and so on, but we have so little control. And we're deceiving ourselves when we think we have more control than we do, and we're constantly frustrated by how many things we can't control. And then secondly, ownership. We think we own things, and we do. We have deeds, we have titles, we have things that we call our possessions. But in actual fact, God or the universe owns them. They pass through our hands. And the whole concept of ownership often creates pride and all kinds of jealousies and so on. So we feel like ownership is a false idea. And then third, maybe the biggest fraud of all, independence. We all want independence, and yet we're so completely interdependent and so dependent on things far beyond ourselves. So we discussed those three deceivers 3 weeks ago, and today we want to talk a little about the three alternatives, the three more accurate and more beautiful paradigms that we can replace control, ownership, and independence with. And we'll probably just have you wait until after the break before we tell you what those three alternatives are. But we've got two or three more minutes, Linda. Do you want to say anything further about, I mean, we could look at this last week. There's so many illustrations that we don't control very much. We don't own anything, and we're not independent.
Well, when you say control, we're in the depths of despair this morning for our granddaughter, whose husband's father is in the hospital dying. He was so vibrant. Remember, he was the basketball star. He got all of his kids playing basketball with him. It was so amazing, and he's young. I don't remember how old he is, but
young by our standards,
and suddenly cancer everywhere. And I mean, this is like 3 weeks ago, or maybe a month ago at the max.
Well, that's the macro of not having control. We don't know when we're going
to
die.
We just have no idea what's going to happen to us next, the next day. There, he put him on a ventilator. They've called all the children to meet at LDS Hospital. And it's just a stunning. You realize you have no control over so many things.
Well, and you take, and you go from that macro down to the micro. We don't control the weather. We don't control the moods of the people we're around. We don't control what the other driver's going to do. We don't control the opportunities and the things that come to us. We don't control what will pass us by that day or what we'll notice. We can control how much we notice, and that kind of leads into an alternative paradigm where instead of control, we're developing an ability to really see what is going on and to grasp the things that matter. And we think there's a similar kind of alternative attitude to replace ownership and to replace independence. And this is important to us right now because we're really moving into the heart of this How to Live the Second Half of Life online course that we're doing. And before we get into all the how-tos of how to live the second half of life physically, how to live it mentally, how to better live it emotionally, socially, and spiritually, before we can really do a deep dive into those, we have to change our paradigms a little bit. And maybe we'll end this first segment before we take a break with a quick idea. This word paradigm, it means a worldview or how you see things and so on. And sometimes a shift in that paradigm can change your whole life. And the best story I've ever heard, which is so brief, is the ship's captain of a huge tanker. And he sees a vessel in his right in his path, and he radios and says, "Move out of the way. We're on a collision course." And the voice comes back on the radio and says, "No, you move." And he gets angry. He says, "I'm a mega tanker. Move. We're on a collision course." And the reply that comes back changes his whole paradigm. The reply is, "I am the lighthouse. You change course." And suddenly everything changes. And that's how paradigm shifts are. And if we can shift our paradigm from control, ownership, and independence to the three alternatives we're going to suggest to you in a minute, it can change everything.
So we look forward to that. With that thought, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. I'm sure you have been breathless while you've been listening to this wonderful BYU Radio that sponsors this show. We're so grateful to them and to James Finlayson, who's our producer. He does such a great job. But we don't want to keep you hanging any longer because we know that you're dying to know the solution to all your problems. And here you
well,
go.
And in just 15 minutes, we're not going to have time to cover it all. But
oh, really?
I want to start out by saying, you know, we are, many of you are participating already in this online course, How to Live the Second Half of Life. And you can look at that, and we'll put in the show notes the link if you want to join that course. But here's the deal. Linda, I'm going to say it as briefly as I can, each of these alternatives, and then you respond, okay?
Okay.
So the alternative paradigm to thinking you can control things is a beautiful word that starts with an S and has 11 letters. And it's a word that people have used a lot lately. It became kind of a faddish word a short time ago, but it's probably wrongly used by most people. And the word is, drum roll, serendipity. Now, serendipity is often thought of as luck. It's just something that happened, a good thing that just sort of came to you. But in actual fact, the man who coined the word, an English author named Horace Walpole, defines serendipity as follows. Serendipity is a state of mind wherein a person, through awareness and sensitivity, frequently finds something better than that which he is searching for. It's a beautiful concept. It's the idea that, yes, we have goals and we have lists of to-dos and we have things we're trying to do and accomplish, but if we're wise, we try to add to those goals an awareness and an openness to unexpected things, so that we're able to notice things that are better than that which we're seeking, things that come to us as gifts, opportunities, people we meet, new acquaintances, new opportunities, new directions in our life that may be missed if we're so locked on to this thing that we're trying to control or that we're trying to do. And so serendipity is an awareness and a sensitivity and a sagacity, a wise sort of perspective that allows us to notice things that we would otherwise miss.
Well, let me just give you one example from the other day, and this may seem really trite, but it was really important to me that day. I am, along with a friend, we are in charge of our class reunion. You know that we're old, so I can
don't
just
even
admit.
Say how many years.
I have to admit, it's been 60 years since I graduated from high school. And I was worried about a lot of things. I needed to contact people, and would so-and-so come, and so on. Anyway, I went to the grocery store, and there was our friend who I had been contacting, but she was there with her husband, who's been really ill, and she's lived in Montpelier ever since high school. And she knew everything. She had the answers to everything that I needed for that this particular day. Can we do this? Does this work? It was amazing. And I walked down by the milk, and there was another friend from my class.
Right by the milk.
Right by the milk. And she, it was crazy because she, her brother is going to come. Her brother's, her dad was our principal for all of our high school years. And we loved him, and we were trying to get somebody to come and speak about his life. And there she was right in front of me. I'd written to her the night before, no answer. And she said, my brother will come. And he will do it. He's a great guy. So then I go to the checkout stand, and there was a guy that I had just driven by his house because I knew where he lived, and he hadn't responded, but he was a good friend. And he was standing in front of me in the line to check out. I said, Dennis, are you coming to the reunion? Because he hadn't responded. He says, yes, I'm coming, and I'll bring my wife. Honestly, that just blew me away. I mean, this is not like heaven directed all that. I don't know. Maybe it did.
Well, no, I think that those little things, it's like the lights turn green. It's like the speed of going slow. It's like when your mind is open rather than closed and locked into these little goals that you think you're going to do and you're trying to control everything, there's often just an opening. And you know, you most inventors didn't analyze what they figured out. They just noticed it. It's like Alexander Fleming noticed the window was open and some mold blew in and landed on a petri dish, and out of that simple observation came penicillin. A guy named Vulcan noticed that if you left rubber boiling in a certain way, it vulcanized. And it's all about the best things. We have our best ideas in the shower. It's like developing this mindset where as we go after our list of to-dos for the day or our normal routine, we're open to the fact that we may find something better. There may be an opportunity. An old friend might call. There might be an idea that leads you to change something in your life, grasping those things that come to us.
Or you might meet somebody by the milk that has the answer to what you're looking for.
So we're just trying to give you a clue on each of these three. So the second one, what do you replace the concept of ownership with? Because we all know that ownership is flawed. We all know that it creates comparison and win-lose and a lot of sort of, you know, oftentimes condescension. The limbs that grow, if you think of the trunk of a tree being ownership, the limbs that grow on that tree really are jealous. It's pride, I have more than he does, or it's jealousy, I have less than he does, or it's envy, or it's condescension. We don't like that tree, we don't like that trunk. But the word to replace it, beautifully and coincidentally, is also a word that starts with S and has 11 letters. Stewardship. Oh, how that changes everything. Think of the word stewardship. It acknowledges that things pass through our control or our ownership. They're owned by God. They're owned by the universe. We are grateful. Now you have this limb of stewardship where you're taking care of things that you really don't deserve but that are in your care. And the limbs that grow on the tree are win-win and being happy for someone who does something you haven't done or has something you don't have. And we're all in it together. We have stewardship. We're doing the best we can with what is given to us. And it's such a purer, truer way to view life. It's a better paradigm.
It really is. And it's hard, too. It's hard to be stewards over a lot of things. And there are a lot of complications, and things can go wrong. And there are so many issues with stewardship, but when you think of it as stewardship instead of ownership, you're like, I own this. This has got to be perfect. I've got to do this. I've got to do this. Instead, just change your mind and say, I'm just the steward over this property and over what I have to do. I'm just doing it because I want to instead of I have to.
And you're noticing as we talk a little, just the tip of the iceberg on these, that these are spiritual concepts. You know, control is not a spiritual concept, but serendipity, spiritual serendipity, really is something that's important. Talk while I silence my phone, Linda. Say some more.
You know, we realize that sometimes ownership is so wearying, isn't it? We're up at the lake here, and we just keep adding more and more bedrooms. We've had more and more people, and we do rent it when we're not using it so that we can pay for it. And it's really a pain in a lot of ways. But in other ways, when you change that around, last night I was cleaning my like 14th toilet or something.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is hard.
We have too many toilets here.
And we do have help, but sometimes you have to get ready for the help. But anyway, it really is amazing how it changes your mindset when you think, this, I don't really own this. I'm just the steward over this, and I'm really blessed.
Yeah, and then the third one, oh, isn't it great, Linda? It's another word that starts with S and has 11 letters. And it is the alternative, the spiritual alternative, to the flawed sort of concept of independence. It recognizes our dependence and our interdependence, and it's the combination of two other really interesting words. So the alternative word, the 11-letter S word, is synergicity, which is our attempt to combine the word synergy, which simply means people do better when they work together. It means essentially 2 + 2 = 5 or 10, because the total can be greater than the sum of its parts when we work together. That's really a big pushback on independence. No, we work together, we're interdependent, we each help each other. And the other word that it combines, you know, when you say synergicity, we're talking about synergy and synchronicity, which is a word coined by Carl Jung, and essentially means timing is beyond our control, and things will happen in their own time, and we don't need to push them all the time. So we work together, we work in the timing that's beyond us, we don't get impatient, and it's just such a beautiful concept and a spiritual concept compared to the very sort of worldly idea of independence. So those are the three alternatives: serendipity, stewardship, and synergicity. And if those interest you, we're going to use as the picture on our podcast this week the book where we really tried to write about those things. And it's a book that has two sides. One side of the book is the happiness paradox. The paradox being that control, ownership, and independence, the three things we think are going to bring us happiness, actually rob us of happiness because they're false and they lead us in worldly directions. And then the other side of the book is called the happiness paradigm, where we suggest that the alternatives are serendipity, stewardship, and synergicity. So if that interests you, that book is always available on Amazon or in any bookstores. We're not pushing it. We're going to keep telling you about it in this podcast. But we'll show you the book on the cover, and we'll put a little thing in the link about how to get in this course. And we can explore new paradigms together for the second half of life.
I have just one parting question. Does synchronicity have 11 letters?
Yes. No. synergicity has a lot of letters.
But the synchronicity.
No, no.
Dang, you missed your calling on that.
No, because we don't want that word. We want synergistic.
Oh, I see. Oh,
it has to combine synergy with the other word.
Okay. You're off the hook.
Linda's laughing at me.
All right. I just love it. I am married to a very unique person, as you probably know.
I'm married to a very unique and beautiful person.
Well, we love
you
that
you... You look good today, by the way.
Oh, thanks. We love that you join us once in a while. I mean, probably not every week, but we really do appreciate you. We wish we could talk face to face, but someday, maybe once in a while, we meet you and say, I listened to that. Anyway, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Tires on the Road.
Bye till then.